You're listening to Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol. I'm Jonna Spilbore.
I'm Carol Pesci.
And this is the podcast version of our award-winning radio show.
That's right.
Now you can listen to our radio show whenever you want on your time.
It's Happy Hour. What is Happy Hour?
It's a 60 minutes
or so
where you have a happy beginning, middle, and ending.
People expect from this show?
Number one, they should expect to get some really good stuff because we have
stuff.
A lot of stuff.
Meaning content.
Yeah.
Smart guests.
Yep.
Make your life better.
And we make you laugh.
Laugh a little. Because that's about it.
You only go around once.
Yeah.
You gotta have a little fun.
All right. Listen up.
Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour here. Another edition of our show with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci and myself. I'm Frankenberry. Happy Sunday morning. And hello, ladies. How are we doing today?
Doing all right.
What day is it, you guys? Any ideas?
completely lost track at this particular point?
I truly have. and I've decided that my life is a lot more interesting, or perhaps I'm a lot more boring when I am not able to go out and collect material for this show. You know? Oh, my goodness. It's been so surreal.
I'm impressed, Jonna, that like when you go on and do a Facebook video and you're like day 19, I have no idea how many days in we are. So I'll give you credit for that.
Well, it's like Jonna's in a prison cell and she's using her blood. She's using her blood to mark on the the block walls, the cinder block walls. 1, 2, 3, 4, and a slash for the 5.
Slash.
You know. Because they won't allow her a pen, so she does have to use her own blood.
That is exactly it. Because I've noticed, tell me if this is what you guys have noticed. Now, we're roughly a month or so in, maybe actually a little more at this point. And have you noticed, like, you know how they talk about flattening the curve, and that was the whole reason behind this lockdown and all that stuff, and they always show that little graph. That little, hill.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, you know what? We have our own curve that's been flattened as people who have been sort of prisoners. And I think we started out as in the state of disbelief, and then we moved into, let's kumbaya, let's everybody help everybody. I'm going to help you. You're going to help me. And then we went a little higher to a point where, like, we were okay, getting excited to, like, get out and get back to life. And now I'm on the downside where I'm just pissed off all the time. Like, let me out. My curve is flat. Totally flat. I need out of here.
Well, it's not just your own personal curve that you're concerned with right now there, Miss Spilbore.
It ain't?
Well, no. I mean, everybody else has a curve that you then bounce into once you get out of the house.
Oh, shut up, Dr. Fauci.
you're an extrovert, Jonna, so it has to be. We love going out. I'm an introvert and I work from home. So life, I'm comfortable. You got to be pulling your hair out.
Well, I'm not really an extrovert. I am the most extroverted introvert you're ever going to meet. That's really what I am. And I'm kind of like a hunter-gatherer. My life is all about going out and hunting and gathering food at fine restaurants, accompanied by a nice margarita. That's my life, and I miss that. I miss that a lot.
I'm sorry. I'm just envisioning you with like a quiver of arrows on your back. You've got a bow. You're walking into a restaurant, a little scrunched down, holding that bow. Somebody open the kitchen door. I know there's a chicken in there. Come on.
Cook that baby up. Put it on my plate.
Jonna, all right, so tell me the truth. Have you yet Googled, can you eat raccoons?
No, I have not Googled that. I will never Google that, my little raccoon.
Carol, bad Carol.
Well, she's got to start fending for herself and killing her prey.
Got to regular
raccoons.
Oh, me and my raccoons, we have an understanding. They provide me a little bit of entertainment. I provide them a little bit of birdseed. It's very symbiotic. We're all good.
I also recommend with those guys definitely some fruits, by the way. Fruits and other nuts.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, I know that Celie will feed the raccoons at the house a ton of bananas and some other stuff.
So. Oh, I didn't know that. Do they peel their own bananas? You got to peel the bananas for them.
Just cut them up for them. She'll take bananas and she'll chop it up into some breakfast cereal and she'll milk it up a little bit and they go to town.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yes,
raccoons have got to be like. I thought I was treating them well. Apparently, no. I got to start making them ice cream sundaes. So.
Yeah, do a quick Google and I'm sure they'll like you even more.
It is actually something to do. How is everybody holding up, though? So I'm only half kidding when I say that I am constantly ticked off because at this point I am, and I'm not saying it's justified, not justified, but it's just part of the continuum of being in the state. How are you two doing with it? Have you noticed anything different? You learned anything about yourselves? Are you ready to get back into the real world? What's up?
Go ahead, Frank.
Oh, me? All right, I'll go first. To tell you the truth right now, though I've been trying to stay away from the news because there's just only so much that I can take, especially when, it always starts with, the dramatic numbers that are just so sad.
Yep.
So I try to stay away. But I did see a recent model that showed a dramatic difference in the possible top numbers between this model's numbers if we do stay inside for the rest of the month, if not like another 3 weeks. So when you see something like that, it's like, yeah, I don't mind. But like Carol said, I'm also A-okay fine being by myself, and I have been for a long time, so it doesn't bother me as much as it may other people. I actually, to tell you the truth, even though I come into work every day for kind of a half day, I can't wait to get the heck out and get back home. Go ahead.
I'm grateful. I work from home. I don't have to go out. The only thing I have to do is go to the grocery store, and I'm doing that as little as I possibly have to, and that's it. I'm grateful. I get to be home, and we're doing this every single week. I have such admiration for all of those who are out there on the front lines, the grocery stores, the truck drivers, the healthcare workers, all of the people that are out there being brave and putting their own lives and health at risk to keep our essentials going. I'm just so grateful for that.
Oh, life would be far, far worse without the people who are willing, ready, and able to do that and have been doing it this entire time.
And here's something I want to throw out an idea I had. I haven't gone to the grocery store since the idea hit me. And John, I know you're going to like this because you love to tip when you go out to restaurants. The next time you go to the grocery store and it asks if you want to get cash back, say yes and get $5, $10, $20, whatever, and tell the clerk to keep it. I'm going to totally do that next time I go.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, if you can afford that, the few dollars, I think that would be great. I wouldn't be a grocery store clerk right now for anything.
I think that's a really nice idea, and I hope that the grocery store management lets them keep the some establishments, for whatever reason, don't let their people keep tips. I've never understood that, to be honest with you. But I think that's a great idea. But I am looking forward to, before this happened, and in our lifetime, right, because none of us were born anywhere near 1918 when the last pandemic hit, although we were around for SARS. We never thought twice. Like, I wash my hands and I stay away from sick people, but I never thought twice about being in closed quarters. And I'm wondering if we're going to change our behavior when we do get to open the doors and get back out and go to Broadway and go to games and go shopping and do those things. How much of our lives will change and for how long? I'm very curious to see how we operate as creatures and habits.
I don't see any way that things can't change in that regard, that there aren't going to be, probably some drastic adjustments. I read a headline earlier today that said some experts believe that there won't be live concerts until next year. Like me myself, I mean, this is the time of year where I can't wait to go to a ball game. Hey, look, I got no issues. Right. Whatever baseball decides to do, I got no issues watching it on my little tablet and staying at home. I'm not going out. I'm not going in public. And I'll probably stay that way well beyond whatever may be considered a safe time to get the world working again. And I think that's going to be a lot of people. I think a lot of people are going to be reticent to go anywhere in a public gathering, to sit next to some stranger that you know nothing of and know that they're breathing on you and coughing on you. And heck, you know, is it still out there? Because it is. I mean, it's not like I've said it before, but it's not like a virus is saying, oh, crap, they gave us a deadline. We got to stop. So, it's definitely going to change my behavior and probably make me even more introverted.
Can that happen?
I'm not sure. I'm discovering, though, that it's possible.
I probably shouldn't tell you guys this, but I, I'm trying in my own little way to manipulate the universe in a positive way. And so I, like, just actually, before we got on this call, my much younger boyfriend is going to miss having, a lot of people, I know a few people had birthdays in the last few weeks, and you're not allowed to go celebrate or do anything, right? So I said to myself, what can I do to manipulate the universe and send a signal that we want to kind of get back to normal? So for his birthday, I bought him, taking a big, big risk, Mets tickets for the game that is right now scheduled for June 12th against the Nationals. And, you know, and I'm going to keep my, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed because I'm like, listen, I want the world. I mean, Broadway is intending to get back in business, I think, June 7th. So this could be a time when people are like, okay, it's time to rejoin the living. And I got really good, really cheap tickets. Go figure I probably shouldn't say this. I called my Botox doctor, who's not taking any appointments. And I said, I want to make a future appointment. And they said, okay. And I made a future appointment for May 7th. Listen, it's happening, people. It's happening.
You are an optimist. That is some serious wishful thinking there, Jonas Spielborg.
I walk the walk.
Botox and Mets games.
Yeah. Yep. Getting my life back.
Oh, man.
No, but I can't wait. You know, and I miss sitting in a studio with you guys. I miss Maya and Carol and our friends, you know, girls' night out. Like, I miss that stuff.
Yeah, I understand that, too. But, you know, like I said, it's just wanting to go back and saying that it's time for us to go back doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a good time to do so. You know, with the way things, you know, I mean, yes, things are flattening across the board and, you know, maybe some numbers are decreasing, but there's still a lot of numbers out there. I guess it's just a matter of time. Look, they come up with some sort of viable treatment sometime soon. Obviously, it's not going to be a vaccine for a little while, but if they come up with a viable treatment that seems to work, I think that's something that can make people a little bit more comfortable. And then when you get to that point, then maybe people can say, well, you know what? Now it has become a little bit more like the flu and there's a viable treatment so that, you know, I'm not going to be scared to death to go out and, you know, to possibly come across this.
And we are making progress. And, you know, let's look at the bright side for a minute. The numbers of deaths, even though one death is too many, are far, far lower than they originally projected. We're making strides in therapeutics and potential vaccines quicker than we've probably ever done that before. And if you really want to get technical, it's quite possible, because we still have not reached that level, that the number of deaths from this is going to be less than the number of deaths in 2017 and 2018 from the regular flu. So there are some bright spots because of the sacrifices that we've made and because of the decisions that, you know, the people in charge of us have made, that we were able to really and truly honestly get through this as we eventually will. So those are silver linings to it all.
Right. And it is good to have positive signs out there. And, you know, if people are able to do it and if you're able to take it a little bit further, because that might be even safer, I don't see any reason why not.
Yeah, no, and a lot of people would agree with you. And then there are some people who get a little bit crazy like me, and sometimes I sit around by myself, especially this last week where I didn't have electricity for basically 2 days, saying to myself, you know, what's the point in living if I have to live like Laura Ingraham? I mean, you know, I ain't doing campfires. I need a hair dryer. Did I ever tell you guys the story? Not that this is like a little bit of a sidebar, but just for the listeners out there who might not really have a true grasp on my shallowness, when I had an ex-boyfriend a long time ago who was, you know, very crunchy, very granola, and the one and only time that I went camping was with this ex-boyfriend, and we were packing the car, and I had, you know, my hair dryer I threw in the trunk, and my ex-boyfriend was like, what is that? I'm like, it's a hair dryer. What do you think it is? He just laughed and then pulled it out of the trunk. Like, I can't survive. I need those comforts, okay? I need them. Like, the electricity went out this week in my house right after I took a shower. Do you know how long it's been since I have not blown my hair dry? I didn't even recognize myself. I'm like, who are you? I'm just not good with that stuff.
Jonna, that's what hats are for, and you like wearing hats.
Oh, no. I mean, my hair is, like, seriously, I looked at my hair, I'm like, wow, I forgot how curly this lid can be. You look like Monica from Friends when she went on a tropical vacation. Yeah. I think I did. Oh, but, you know, we gotta laugh a little. We're all going to be able to high-five each other when this is done, and that'll be a good thing, too.
Now, are we high-fiving each other while wearing gloves?
Probably.
Okay. Because there will be that middle ground period where it is okay to shake hands, but not unless you're wearing gloves.
Yeah, I bet you we don't shake hands for a very long time, to be honest.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. Isn't that what the doc said earlier last week? He said something to that effect, that I don't see us shaking hands for quite a while now.
Until we forget. I mean, I don't know. You know, there might come a point in time when we forget and we start doing all, look, we've shaken hands for our whole lives, right? But I don't need to do that.
Yeah, I don't need to either. I'm good there.
All right. Anyway. So we today have one of our very favorite guests coming up.
Yes.
And the time could not be more perfect. We have had on our show many times our good friend, Dr. Max Gomez from CBS 2 News New York, and he is a 9-time Emmy Award-winning journalist. He also won an award for excellence in time of crisis for his reporting on 9/11. And what I love about Dr. Max, he's such a calming voice of reason. His knowledge is incredible. His ability to help us understand things in easily, you know, sometimes complex medical things in easily understandable terms, and just telling us the truth. And he's just fantastic. So we reached out to see if he could take a few minutes. Sure, he's been busy as well. And he is going to be our guest coming up, talking to us about not freaking out, not being petrified, but being prepared and staying safe. And we're going to ask them all probably some of the key questions that are on everybody's mind. So when we come back, Dr. Max Gomez from CBS 2 News will be with us.
All right, that sounds good. We love Dr. Max, and that's what you have next in segment number 2. You've got Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. This is Happy Hour, and we'll return.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And we're back here with Happy Hour on K104 with Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci, and myself. And we've got our guest on today, and a guest we've had on this show numerous times. And he's one of our favorites because he's down to earth. He basically explains things to the point where you can really understand and you can feel comfortable when you're all done with it. We've got Dr. Max from Channel 2 with us right now. And hi, Dr. Max. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good. I'm actually, all things considered, not bad. As a little cabin feverish, but otherwise not bad.
Oh, God. Yeah. So Dr. Max Gomez, if you haven't heard his name, you can live under a rock. He's been on air for just a couple of years. Last count that I knew, and correct me if I'm wrong, he won an Excellence in the Time of Crisis for his coverage of September 11th, 9-time Emmy Award-winning medical journalist. He always has such good information, calming voice of reason, and communicates complex medical things to us in a way that we can that's easy to understand. And we're just so grateful he is here to talk to us. He is somebody you can trust and listen to, and who will tell you the truth about anything. And in these times, that's something we need more than ever. And Dr. Max, we're so grateful to have you with us today.
Wow, I'm blushing already. Thank you.
Are you still at 9 Emmys? Has there been another Emmy since the last time I've read?
No, still at 9. And you know, it's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned or brought up 9/11, because what is going on now reminds me in a lot of ways, even though we're not locked away back then, to what happened after. It was actually a little bit after 9/11. We had the anthrax scare, and I don't know how many of our listeners remember anthrax, but boy, people were completely freaked out. They were listening to all kinds of, unfortunately, crazy rumors out there. I can't tell you the number of people I had to talk off the ledge because they were going nuts. I remember hearing from one woman that she was calling in or sending in an email or something that said, you know, my people are telling us, experts are telling us to be more vigilant now. And she said, if I get any more vigilant, I will have to ask my kids for ID when they come home from school. And it was that kind of anxiety level. So, in a lot of ways, it reminds me of that, and it's exactly right. You have to be careful about who you listen to, consider the source, and hopefully let's square some of that away right now.
That's a really great point, because Dr. Max, one of the things I was thinking, and I don't want to sound like I never want to sound like I'm minimizing this, but something that's bothered me since the moment, I guess really since we were originally locked down, which was mid-March, is that I honestly think that a lot of people got infected with this COVID-19 before it became a thing and survived it just fine. And I can't help but think that sometimes the media made us more anxious about it. Not that we wouldn't have had people hospitalized, but we worried about it so much that we made it a little bit worse than it was going to be, even though it is bad. I'm not saying it's not bad, but we almost made it worse by the way we think about it. Is that, maybe that's a stupid way to think about it.
Well, no, I sort of, when this first started, and, you know, we were talking about it back in January and February, and I'd be on the air, and I told people, I said, you know, look, we need to be prepared, we need to be concerned, but we don't need to panic. And so I sort of bought into that for a while. But then when people are getting sick, and people were, and you know, even healthy people, and the first responders, and people on ventilators, and it seemed that there was what they called community spread or community infection, which meant it wasn't somebody who had come in and traveled, or to our knowledge didn't have any direct contact with somebody who was infected. It started to get pretty scary then, and so this always happens. It's hard for the media to walk that middle line between making sure that people take things seriously and causing panic. You know, if we minimize it, we get accused of, well, you didn't tell us enough, and that's why, you know, our friends are dying. And on the other hand, you're scaring the hell out of people, and you're causing panic. So it's kind of tough. But, you know, let's talk about ways that we can alleviate some of the panic, or make sure people understand it. No, ask me something. Tell me. I'll answer questions. Let's do it that way. I don't want to get off onto a rant. I'll go for 20 or 30 minutes. Ask me something.
One question that I have is, what it seems like this is so highly contagious. Is it more than other times that we've dealt with similar things on a smaller scale? Is it not? Why is it so, then, if it is so highly contagious? What's happening there?
It's pretty contagious. It's not as contagious, believe it or not, it's not as contagious as measles. And it's probably in the same ballpark as the flu in terms of how contagious it is. I have to preface kind of almost all of the answers that I'll tell you with. We're still learning a lot about this virus. This is only, you know, we've only known really about it and really been looking into it for three and a half months, maybe something like that, 4 months at most. So, you know, a lot of things we're still learning about it, and there's a ton of research going on about it right now. So, but as far as we can tell, it's contagious. It's pretty contagious. Again, not as much as measles, probably about the same as the flu. It probably requires you to actually inhale or aspirate some infected droplets. And that comes from coughing, sneezing, or sharing, say, you know, utensils, eating utensils, that sort of a thing, and being really close with people. There are some people who've said that you can get it from, you know, that the virus exists for hours, sometimes days, on substances. Theoretically, that's possible. That's been done under laboratory conditions and being very, very stringent. It's going to depend on the temperature, on the humidity. And don't forget, let's say the guy who delivered your mail or the Amazon package was infected, didn't know it, had some on his hands when he carried the package and set it down, and now you're going to pick up the package, right? So what's it going to take for you to get infected? You're going to first have to pick up that package within, you know, the few hours that that virus will last on cardboard. It doesn't last that long on cardboard. You're going to have to pick it up, touch it in exactly the same place that the Amazon guy had picked it up, get it on your hands, and then, in pretty short order, touch your face, your eyes, your nose, your mouth to transfer it, and that's how it gets into your body. So is it theoretically possible? Yeah, it's theoretically possible we could get hit by an asteroid tomorrow, but it's a pretty low possibility. The main way is breathing in those infected droplets from somebody who hawks a loogie on you. I can say that on the radio, right?
Yes, you can. And that is just enough reason. That mental image right there is just enough reason to continue our social distancing.
Exactly.
All right, so my question, Dr. Max, is this. We've lived a long time, like everybody keeps referencing this plague from 1918 that none of us are old enough to actually remember. But before this happened, look, like all the things you just described, we do on a daily basis, except I, you know, fortunately I don't get too many loogies, you know, spit on me regularly. But our bodies have always been just so resilient, right? A lot of us don't get sick very often. We come in contact with sick people all the time. What is there something different about this virus that makes it harder for our bodies to just fend off as we naturally fend off things? Or is it something
that's going on with it? Same reason that the 1918 Spanish flu was so deadly. It was a brand new virus at the time. It was a brand new version of the flu virus, and this is a brand new coronavirus. And because of that, none of us have any built-in immunity. For example, even now, you know, if somebody catches the flu, because you were dumb enough not to get the flu vaccine, if you catch the flu, the chances are that either because you've had the flu before or you've gotten some vaccines before, you've got a little built-in immunity in there, and so it may not be as bad as the previous ones, as say the 1918 flu pandemic was. In this case, the coronavirus is really truly brand new. That's why it's called the novel coronavirus. And we don't have any immunity to it at all. And so when it hits, it's really going to go to town. And that's the problem. Still, there are some people who won't get terribly, terribly sick. And there is going to be some sort of difference between all of our immune systems. And especially if we have any underlying illnesses, by the way, that makes a huge difference. Age and underlying difference, those are by far the most people who are dying of this. But even relatively younger, healthier people are still getting very sick. Even if you survive it, you know, people who survive it say, oh man, I have never been this sick in my life. And so at first, you know, you're worried that you're going to die, and after a few days, you're worried you're not going to die.
Oh wow.
So that's the issue, is that there's no built-in immunity there. And even though you've been lucky and you don't get sick all that often, I don't know that I want to roll the dice and catch this and believe that my immune system is going to be able to handle it.
Oh, yeah.
I have a question about protective equipment. I'm now, if I go out, I am wearing a mask. If I have to go grocery shopping, that's about the only place that I am going. I've not worn any gloves. One of the things that concerns me about the gloves, besides the, freaking litter that people are peeling them off and dropping them around all over the place, that upsets me. Anyway, this virus is transferred through the mucous membrane. It is not transferred through your skin. And I kind of feel like we're better off not wearing gloves and being diligent about washing our hands than wearing gloves. And then where do you take them off and lay them down? And are you transmitting it more by wearing gloves? Should we wear gloves? I guess that's my question.
You're not transmitting it anymore. And you're right that the skin is a very good barrier to infection from this. This virus does its dirty work by attaching, going in through the mucous membranes and attaching to the lining of our airways and down into the lungs and so forth. But if you really are conscientious about washing your hands as soon as you've been outside and potentially picked up or touched things that might have been contaminated, and if you are very, very careful not to touch your eyes, your nose, your face, and your mouth, then, yeah, gloves don't necessarily give you any more protection than that. But that's a big if, because we touch our faces unconsciously thousands of times a day. It's incredible how often we do that. And so the gloves give you that one little extra bit of protection, and it's also a reminder to wash your hands or to not touch your face. Same thing with the mask. The mask, if you are not infected, probably does not add all that much more protection. The main reason for a mask is if you are infected, and you may not even realize you're infected, if you cough, sneeze, talk, whatever, everything, almost all of the infected droplets are going to get caught in the mask. So you are really, by wearing a mask, you are really protecting others from getting infected. It doesn't really provide that much infection protection for you, but what it does do is it reminds you, as you go to touch your face, ooh, I've got a mask on, leave my face alone.
That's one of the most enlightening things. I didn't realize how much I touch my face until you try not to touch your face.
Oh, yeah.
And you become conscious of it. And I thought I was a diligent hand washer, but I have washed I literally wash my hands after I do everything these days. And maybe that's something that we don't have to change when we get back to life. I guess, it can't hurt, although our skin gets completely dried out. But I noticed too.
Hand washing, especially in cold and flu season, is a good idea. But we probably don't need to do it quite as much as we're all doing it these days. Hey, you want to talk about tests? You want to talk about testing? I just did a Max Minute for CBS. It's going to air tonight about testing and what it's going to take to reopen the country and get back to normal.
Yeah.
Is that something everybody's talking about now?
Yeah, of
right?
course. Yeah, go to it.
Yep.
So here's my take on it. If we try to go back to normal or open up the country without having widespread, universal, robust testing, we are courting disaster. We are courting disaster if we try to start opening it up again until everybody can get tested. It is just, it will be a second wave of infection and a second wave of lockdown that will really have people upset and messed up. So we don't have widespread, universally available testing. I don't care what anybody says. Have you tried to get a test? You can't get it.
No.
You can't get it unless you are truly sick. And even then, they'll say, well, come back. And let's say you get tested. It could take several days for you to get that test back. And so we don't have the testing. And that's being done by several private companies that are now fighting each other to see how much money they can make off the states who are trying to buy it so that we can get testing. There are a bunch of people, several companies that are trying testing now with brand new technology. Rutgers is doing a spit test. There's a company in Syracuse, New York, called Quadrant Biosciences that has a different version of a spit test that they are trying to get approved under emergency utilization. There's a company out in California that's using a kind of modified diabetes meter, believe it or not, that in 15 seconds for, I think it's $5 or $10, will tell you whether or not you have the virus, and it does it by comparing it electronically to a picture, an electron microscope picture of the coronavirus. But so many of these things are stuck in the FDA, and they're kind of taking their own sweet time to do it. And under normal circumstances, I would say, and look, I'm a science guy. I always say, let's err on the side of we need evidence-based medicine. We have to have, double-blind, placebo-controlled studies before we release things. You know, this is battlefield medicine right now. This, we have thousands of, what is the latest number? I just looked up on the TV screen here and I missed it. I think it's over 20,000, no? People who have died of this yes. now. Just in the last couple of months. This is battlefield medicine, and so we need to try things now that we might not try the same way or as quickly as we would normally. And then after you do the virus testing, we need to have accurate, widespread, available antibody testing. And what the analyte, remember, the testing that we've been doing so far and that everybody knows has heard about actually looks for the genetic material of the virus itself. So it's really looking for the virus itself. Now, what we also have to institute is widespread antibody testing. And what that is, your body, when it gets an infection, makes antibodies to the germ that has attacked you. And this is old technology. We've been using that for HIV testing since the mid-80s, right? So this is, 20, 30, 35 years now that we've been doing it. Your body will make antibodies. And so if we now have an accurate and widely available and inexpensive antibody test, what that tells you is that you have been exposed to the coronavirus, right? And if you have it, if you have been exposed, you are antibody positive, and you have recovered, there's a very good chance, it's not 100% yet, because this is one of those things where we don't know for sure how long, whether you really are immune, but it looks like you are probably immune then to reinfection, and probably immune to reinfection for, the best guess right now is at least a year. And those are the people who can then go back to work because they are immune to reinfection. You have the antibody, you have recovered, and now you are able to go back to work and start. Those are the people who can start to open up businesses and the economy again. It takes about a month for your body to make the antibodies to the coronavirus. We know that. Those studies, it looks, have been done. Takes about a month for you to really develop a robust, as they say, antibody response to the virus. And once you have that, and if you have recovered, and it probably will take that long for you to really feel, back to normal, then you're immune for a while and you can go back to work. So those are the two tests, but we gotta have them available. Everybody's got to be able to get it at an affordable price, and we don't have that. And until we get that, if we start to send people back to work and try to open things up, we are looking at a disaster in the making all over again.
That's scary. Well, Dr. Max, I wanted to ask you, sorry, Carol, logistically, how would that work, though? Are these tests something that we could do outside of a doctor's office? Like, could we go to a local pharmacy? Like, eventually, would it be beneficial to get it anywhere? And then carry the results around with you, or do we have to go to the doctor's office on en masse and do it? You know, like, how would it work logistically?
Well, that's a good question in terms of, you know, if you're out on the street and you're, you know, back to work, how do you know, or how is somebody else? You're at the dry cleaner, or you're running the grocery store, and you are not wearing gloves, and you're not wearing a mask, which might be a little crazy because somebody who is infected might come in. How are they going to know that you're not infected? And, you know, perhaps we do need some sort of a vaccination certificate that kids have to have, you know, in order, or you might have to have in order to travel to Southeast Asia or Africa or places where there's, where there's some endemic diseases. So eventually, the FDA isn't crazy about home testing. And I understand that because, it's hard to make a home kit idiot-proof. And this is too important to not have, to have something that isn't idiot-proof. So we put out there are fast, they're easy, and they're cheap. So, and eventually I'm sure that, legislatures, whether at the state or the federal level, will say corona testing will have to be free, or it has to be covered by your health insurance.
Right.
Because what you want is everybody to be able to get the test. So it'll be that you have to be able to get it, and you have to be able, and there not be an impediment.
Do you have any idea how far out that is, how close we are to having the available?
Well, some of them, are basically out there now. And there probably shouldn't be only one. The modified diabetes unit that I was talking about, I was on the phone with the CEO, and they went in front of the FDA today, this afternoon. In fact, I'm waiting for a phone call for them to let me know how far along it went. They say they could be up and running, producing, hundreds of thousands of these a month. That would, again, could test within 15 seconds and cost,
wow,
I forget what he said, $5 or $10. The spit test should be, Rutgers is doing it already. There's enough. So these things are out there. The FDA has to, right now, many of them are being done sort of under emergency utilization, which means let's get it out there and let's try it. We got to try it. But eventually, we can verify their sensitivity and specificity, because we want to be careful about false negatives and false positives. And as soon as we get those and they're available, some of them are available now. It's just that there's not enough of them to make them, roll them out to scale. We need tens of millions of these, probably, we've got, 329 million people in this country, and everybody's going to need to be tested certainly more than once. So we need hundreds of millions of these, and that's, it's doable, but we got to get on it. And until that's available, I do not believe that we should try to get back to so-called normal. And by the way, I mentioned vaccine. Can I tell you my take on vaccines right now?
Sure.
Yeah.
Do not count on vaccines for at least 2 years. It just ain't going to happen. There are lots of them that are out there that are being tested. Some are already in human testing, safety testing. First, they do safety testing to make sure that you give the vaccine and you don't kill anybody. That would be a bad thing. Then you go to phase two. In phase two, you give the vaccine to more people and see that, in fact, people make antibodies and, in fact, looks like they mount what they call an immune response. And then phase three is the really tough one, because now you give it to thousands of people, not hundreds, but thousands of people. And think about it. When you give somebody, say, the vaccine for polio, corona, if there were for HIV, let's say polio, we give that vaccine, you then don't turn around and try to give that person polio to see if the vaccine was effective, right?
Right.
You don't do that. So, at least I don't think so. I hope not. it is So you have to give it to thousands of people and then compare it to thousands of unvaccinated people, right, who are matched for age, weight, underlying disease, et cetera, and then after a period of time, and sometimes it can be a significant period of time, you compare how many people who got the vaccine got infected versus the people who didn't get the vaccine, right?
Right.
And that takes time. There is no way to rush that. You just can't rush that. And so that's why, and then even then, let's say now you've gone to phase three, and it looks like we've got an effective vaccine. There will be probably two or three of them that will turn out to be effective. Now, think about it. You now have hundreds of millions of people, probably billions around the world, who will want and need the vaccine. How long do you think it'll take to scale up and manufacture the vaccine right. for billions of doses? So the vaccine eventually will be the answer, but don't hang your head on that for a while because it's going to be a couple of years. What we need now is an effective treatment, and there are lots of things that are being worked on there as well, from stem cell, from natural killer cells that are stem cells from placenta to the hydroxychloroquine story. Sooner or later, you know, we're going to find some things that will work. But right now what's happening is because we don't have an effective one, and it's kind of, as I said, it's battlefield medicine, people are tossing the kitchen sink at this and hoping that something sticks, that something works. Hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin, natural killer cells from the placenta, a different kind of immune cell from placentas. I just got an email. They want to try nitrous oxide on it. Gosh, now I can't even remember what else. But there are dozens of things that people say make a difference and are an effective treatment. We don't know. Everybody's just, and some of them are in clinical trials. Most are not. Again, because it's battlefield medicine. Everybody's just tossing the kitchen sink at sick patients. They don't want to see them die, and they're trying everything they can. Sooner or later, we'll find some things that will work.
Dr. Max, I think we're running out of time. Frankenberry, we about out of time here?
Yeah, we are. Sadly so, but...
I know. I love talking with him. We got to wrap up. One final question. Dr. Max Gomez from CBS 2 News, 9-time Emmy Award-winning medical journalist here, giving you the best information that he can. My final question, what's the best resource? There's so much stuff coming at us, differing opinions. What's the best place, where's the best place people can go to get the facts and get straight information right now?
You know, it really is the CDC. I believe it's corona.gov, but if you go to cdc.gov, it'll direct you to the right place. And that's the place that still is really doing it just based on science, and that's really the place. Don't listen to all of the crazy other things that are flying around the internet right now. Those things are crazy, and they're not believable. And you know, you could get hurt believing some of them.
Very good, Dr. Max Gomez. Thank you so much for taking the time
to
talk to
us
today. Stay safe.
A pleasure, guys. All right, you too. Stay safe.
Yes, Dr. Max, you as well. Thank you so much for joining us. You've got Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci, and we'll be right back with a quick segment number 3 to wrap things up on this Sunday morning. Stick with us.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And we're back again one more time this morning here with Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
I don't know if we're ever going to get there over the phone. I just don't think it's going to happen. But hey, thanks so much to Dr. Max from CBS Channel 2 News, and his always insightful, but always he is comforting, and he certainly does explain things where everybody can understand what's going on. So you know, hopefully everybody out there feels a little bit better after listening to us talk with Dr. Max.
Yeah, he is actually soothing and trustworthy. I feel better having talked to him. And we could talk about this forever,
And I liked what he had to say. Hopefully we will get that testing going. That would be the key. I would volunteer, because I honestly, you guys, I think I had this in February, but don't quote me.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, that's, you know, one of the things he mentioned there was something that I think I had said earlier, was just, you know, look, until there is some sort of viable treatment that can make people feel a little bit more comfortable. And then he added, obviously, the widespread testing, and then also the testing of the antibodies. You know, yes, those are the kind of things that we really should get a handle on before we jump back into things and possibly have a round two.
Exactly.
But, well, listen, Dr. Max was long, but it was well worth it, and we're going to wrap things up here this morning. So for Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci, Jonna, I hope things are a little bit better now with your power back on.
Yeah, well, you know, I need my stove, Frankenberry, because I use it so frequently.
I can understand. I can understand. And Carol, you enjoy as well, and be safe with you and your gang.
All right, everybody, stay safe.
All right, and I will do the same with my fur balls. And everybody else, be good, stay safe, and we'll be back again next Sunday. We'll do it again at 7 o'clock right here on K104. You've been listening to Happy Hour.
Thanks so much for listening to Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol. If you love this episode, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing.
And if you really loved it, we would love you back if you give us a review on iTunes.
Check us out on the web. You can join us there at netchicks.tv, as well as on Facebook as netchicks.tv. See you next time.